My eyes aren't as good as your sensor blisters, sorry. I like seeing you. It doesn't happen often. She waved inanely, and behind the velvet blueness she saw herself prone on the little ship, waving. The boat dropped away, becoming a speck, then vanishing. Both universes were solid blue. "Hurry back," Inone said. "I'm crippled this close to a planet." "I will, soon, I promise." They sighted the whales that afternoon. Black mountains were leaping out of the water. Syrinx saw them in the distance, huge curved bodies sliding out of the waves in defiance of gravity, crashing down amid breakers of boiling surf. Fountain plumes of vapor rocketing into the sky from their blowholes. Syrinx couldn't help it. She jumped up and down on the deck, pointing. "Look, look!" "I see them," Myrtle said, amusement and a strange pride mingling in his thoughts. "They're blue whales, a big school. I reckon there's about 100 or more."
"Can you see?" Syrinx demanded.
"I can see," Inone reassured her. "I can feel, too. You are happy. I am happy. The whales look happy, too. They are smiling."
"Yes,"
Syrinx laughed. Their mouths were upturned, smiling. A perpetual smile. And why not? Such creatures existing was cause to smile. Myrtle angled Spiros in closer, ordering the edges of the sail to furl. The noise of the school rolled over the boat. The smack of those huge bodies as they jumped and splashed, a deep gullet-shaking whistle from the blowholes. She tried to work out how big they were as the Spiros approached the school's fringes. Some, the big adult bulls, must have been 30 meters long. A calf came swimming over to the Spiros, over 10 meters long, spurting from its blowhole. His mother followed him closely, the two of them bumping together and sliding against each other. Huge forked tails churned up and down, flukes slapping the water, while flippers beat like shrunken wings. Syrinx watched in utter fascination as the two passed within 50 meters of the boat, rocking it alarmingly in their pounding wake. But she hardly noticed the pitching the calf was feeding, suckling from its mother as she rolled onto her side.
"That is the most stupendous, miraculous sight," she said, spellbound. Her hands were gripping the rail, knuckles whitening.
"And they're not even Xenox. They're ours, Earth's."
"Not any more."
Mosor was at her side, as mesmerized as she. "Thank Providence we had the sense to preserve the genes, although I am still staggered the Confederation Assembly allowed you to bring them here."
"The whales don't interfere with the food chain. They stand outside it. This ocean can easily spare 1 million tons of krill a day. And nothing analogous could ever possibly evolve on Atlantis. So they're not competing with anything. The whales are mammals, after all. They need land for part of their development. No, the largest thing Atlantis has produced is the red shark. And that's only 6 meters long."
Syrinx curled her arm round his and pressed against him. "I meant it's pretty staggering for the Assembly to show this much common sense. It would have been a monumental crime to allow these creatures to die out."
"What a cynical old soul you are."
She kissed him lightly, a foretaste of what's to come, then rested her head against him and returned her entire attention to the whales, gathering up every nuance and committing it lovingly to memory. They followed the school for the rest of the afternoon as the giant animals played and wallowed in the ocean. Then when dusk fell, Myrtle turned the Spiros' bow away. The last she saw of the school was their massive dark bodies, arching gracefully against the golden-red skyline, whilst the roar of the blowholes faded away into the ocean's swell. That night, twisters of phosphenic radiance wriggled through the water around the hull, casting a wan diamond-blue light over the half-reefed sail membrane. Syrinx and Mosul brought cushions out onto the deck and made love under the stars. Several times Inone gazed down on their entwined bodies, its presence contributing to the wondrous sense of fulfillment in Syrinx's mind. She didn't tell Mosul. The Laymill Project's electronics division was housed in a 3-story octagonal building near the middle of the campus. The walls were a soft white polyp with large oval windows, and climbing hydrangeas had reached the bottom of the second-story windows.